What's good, everybody, in Chicago? This is episode 215 of the Spawn of Me podcast. I'm your host, Khalif Adams, and I'm joined this week and every week my man, my mellow, the smooth kind of fellow, the man with the newest bourbon in the land. It is Cicero Holmes. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing very, very well. I tip my liquid racism up to the rest of Chicago as I take a sip.
Nicely done. Nicely done. Yeah. You got that liquid racism poured out in a beautiful glass.
That is correct.
And a sniffer. Is it a sniffer or a snifter?
A snifter.
A snifter. It's a snifter, right?
But this is actually a highball glass. So, true. But I do have snifters, you know, because I'm a classy motherfucker. So, yeah, so wow. I do have snifters, but I break out highball glasses for show nights.
True. Also rocking with us this week and every week, we have my man, my mellow, the man who makes science look good, the man who makes mini froze look good, the man who makes tutoring look good. It is Sharif Jackson of SharifJackson.com. How are you, sir?
What up? I got glasses. Cups. Like, my cups don't have names, okay? I have cups. I have mugs. I do have wine glasses. Only stemless, though, because I break the shit out of stemmed wine glasses all the time. So I have a bunch of stemless wine glasses. By the way, Crate and Barrel, if you ever want to endorse us, you have very great stemless wine glasses for a great price as well. I don't have highball with snifters. I don't know what you're even talking about. I got regular cups, man. I put my liquor in regular cups.
I feel like there's a big gulp cup that you washed out back there somewhere.
Right.
Look, it might be something that I got from a Happy Meal in 1986. You know, like, who knows?
Lots of grape juice. Actually,
funny enough, I still have a mug that I used in college.
Wow.
So I graduated college in 2002. So that mug is, you know, 16 years old at this point. Yeah. And I still rock it.
Not bad. It's one of those things where you go back and you're like, I remember what I did when I first got that mug. Exactly. And then you talk about that to your friends and then they laugh at you.
Like, memories.
I remember what you did when you got that cup. I'm kind of used to being laughed at, so it's okay.
Oh, word. Okay.
Yeah. That other wonderful voice that you hear in now face, because we're doing this on Twitch. We have a wonderful guest with us this week. I'm going to read everything off your LinkedIn because this is super dope. You have so many dope things on here. So, one of Forbes magazine's 30 Under 30 Rising Stars of Media for 2013. She is best known for the award-winning blog racealicious.com in the section of race and pop culture. She's currently the deputy editor, digital innovation for ESPN's The Undefeated. We have LaToya Peterson. What's good, LaToya?
How are you doing?
Thank you so much for coming through.
You got my whole bio. I normally get people a gamer bio. I'm like, yes, I've been playing video games. The end.
Well done.
Don't be looking at my pro life. It's my other life. Right. Stay over here.
We got to give you respect due because you make magical things happen. You do a lot of fantastic work and you have for a very long time.
Thank you. We
are blessed and super happy to have you with us this week.
Right. And I love the Spawn On Me podcast. I cannot claim to be a regular listener because I am like 2 years behind on the read. I am. Jenna's still processing. It's still processing in my queue. But I always enjoy seeing y'all. I enjoy your work. You know, shout out to Tanya who is half deaf and rolling around. So. Shout out to all y'all for what you're doing and keeping that torch flame when all of us old racing gaming bloggers retired. Y'all have just kept going. So I was like,
and whew. a special shout out to Tanya because today is her birthday.
That's right.
Happy birthday.
It is her born day, so we got to give her love.
Happy birthday. Nah, come on. She's not here to hear it all, and she can't hear it. Because she got double ear infection, so
that was awful. You know, one thing about that song is it has no end. Like, I've been at some parties where people do it for like it's like as long as the electric slide lasts. I'm like,
so the illest thing is, and Ka may know this, the illest thing is that if you go to Red Lobster in Co-op City, they will sing that version of Happy Birthday.
Oh, my God.
Yes, they will. It is absolutely true. They will sing it, and they will sing it in perpetuity until you tell them to stop.
Yep. Yeah, until you throw Cheddar Bay biscuits at him.
Until you throw a Cheddar Bay biscuit at somebody, or almost, yeah, it's actually really dope, because when we used to do it, when I used to work at Red Lobster, you would go back into the back room where in the line kitchen, and you'd be like, "Yo, we got a birthday at table, whatever," and then you would see everybody like, "Shit."
Yeah,
damn. Damn, we got a birthday at what table? Fuck. Okay, everybody, get your stuff together. You go roll out. You clap it up. Hey, happy birthday! And then you go out and do thing. It is magical, and it's also the Red Lobster that Nicki Minaj used to work at. So that's the same Red Lobster.
Right.
A little bit of Red Lobster
skinny,
trivia.
Skinny Nicki, what they called her?
Hey, only the best from Co-op City Red Lobster.
Only the best. Yeah. So we have a lot of stuff to talk about this week.
We do.
I wanted to bring Latoya on the show because there's this fantastic article that you did on the Undefeated. And it was one of those things that we got a chance to take a look at and dig into, especially on the heels of, if you're familiar with the 2K League that just dropped into existence, at least the draft did. All the players are finally there.
Right.
As of yesterday, Latoya put out this really dope article that basically talked about why there wasn't a lot of representation of Black folks in esports. And we kind of think of esports in multiple ways, right? We think about it in terms of, Dota is the biggest, I would think, at the top of the hill when it comes to esports at this point. Then you have League of Legends also in there. And then you have a smattering of other stuff. Overwatch is kind of pulling itself together in that space too now. But now 2K coming into the fold with 2K League is something totally different. And it was fantastic to see you covering the event yesterday. And I wanted to kind of dig into a little bit of the event, and also, you know, what were some of your thoughts about that particular kind of thing taking place after you've written this particular article?
Yeah, so those things were strangely unrelated when I started this journey, and then they tied themselves together. So I wrote the article because I gave a talk at GDC, the Game Developers Conference, about this same topic where I was looking at, like, confronting the PC console divide, which is really about, like, race and esports. And so I was working on that talk, and I was like, oh, okay, let's go ahead and do it, drop it. And then at the same time, we were watching kind of like the emerging currents in esports, right? And 2K League was coming up, and like 2K is not necessarily what you would think of as a traditional esport, right? It's not the, it doesn't have that huge spectator audience that most people tend to associate. It's just a very different kind of thing. However, it's from 2K. They had their first ever combine, which made it very interesting from an ESPN perspective, right? They're like, who has a combine for esports? They're like, nope, we got this. Okay, we're doing it. So they had a combine and tryout. They decided to do the teams, the way they structured the teams, the way the NBA was involved. All those things were just fascinating. And then, of course, the 2K player base has a player base unlike, I guess, what you would call more traditional esports, where you're like, you know who was playing. It's a very mainstream game. It's played on consoles. It's played, I mean, like, almost everybody in the world is playing. So I was really looking at that going, okay, what is the 2K League about to look like? How does this look, and how does it start changing kind of the demographics that we currently see in professional esports, right? I should mention here, too, and I try to be very clear about this. I said it in my talk. I don't think I put it at the top of the article because it was already too long. But I'm like, you know, let me be really, really clear. I'm a gamer, and I'm a fan of games. Esports is kind of a newish thing, and esports is a thing I got into when I got into ESPN. And that's because video games there tend to take the form of esports. There's a whole team. Super, super great people. Shout out to the esports team. And they cover this all day, every day. This has not been my world. So I was like, oh, you know, I like video games. But like, that's it. I don't really watch League. I don't watch Dota. I don't really truck with it. Until I discovered the FGC, there wasn't really nothing for me to like do. Then I was like, oh, it's fighting games. Okay, I could do this. This is a place. However, spending a decade, I think I started writing about video games on the internet in 2006, right? I was like, oh, dynamics. Things I understand. Stuff I've seen before. Maybe I can like just slide in here real quick with this old knowledge and see if this is still going on. It is. So that's literally where that article came from. I was sitting around going, there's all this new money in this space. Venture capital, you know, Inc. 2 years ago named Riot Games Company of the Year. It's all this stuff. And I was like, we still ain't there.
Right.
How does this always keep happening? So that was literally the genesis of that article. I was like sitting around going, where's the, what, how, let me just look into this and see what's going on. And then, you know, started trying to figure stuff out. And then when I looked up, you know, race and esports, and I just wanted to know, like, what's been written, not much. Not very much. I was
and you sound surprised.
Well, I mean, I shouldn't be surprised. This has literally been my whole career. I'm like, let me be the person write about black people on Vine. Right. I'm always the one being like, what are we doing? All right, let me write about that real quick, and then that's the only thing. Then you're expert by default.
Right, yeah.
I wrote one piece.
Expert of one.
Yes, you know? Exactly. I'm literally the only one that wrote the thing. Like, okay, fine. Well,
right.
Let me keep doing that. So that started. When I started looking into it, I started just looking at the dynamics, and I was like, for me, the important thing was not necessarily like, I mean, trying to cover esports, this could have been a book, right? Like each individual game has its own history and context, player pool, like everything is different from every single thing that you do.
Right.
And so, you know, it was collapsing a lot of things into each other to try to make a article that, you know, works. But the biggest piece of it too is like, if you look at esports as just like a network of grassroots independent things that people are trying to like pretend they are, like, oh, we just, you know, we all love this game, we popped up and then we all started playing. Great.
Right.
That's one thing. Your pool is your pool. Whoever's here, you have just walk-ons. It makes sense. When you start throwing this amount of money at something, we're not talking, you know, when venture capitalists start calling, when billionaires who own sports teams start calling, we are no longer in the grassroots era. We are now in the making of a new economy era. And that's the thing I want people to start thinking about very critically, right? Games are fun. Games are joy. Games are art. Games are so many things, so many different people. But games are also an industry. Games are a business. And we got to think about what that means.
Yeah,
you had a thought like an hour ago. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. It's been an hour. No, I was just going to say that I think that a lot of the writing you'll see about esports and sort of, I guess you'll see more about ethnicity and countries, I think, more than sort of the African-American experience, because I know, especially in games like Overwatch and StarCraft and League, there's always this perception that like the Korean player base is sort of supreme, right? And that the like mostly white American teams can never get like grounding in these games. So I typically see quite a bit of very xenophobic articles and writing on that, because a lot of times the American teams, even in Overwatch, like you'll see it, they'll hire away people from like Korea and like some of these other countries to fly over and play on the American teams. And I know some of that has like happened with 2K as well, because I know that there's some people that got drafted and like are moving to those cities, right? To play on those teams. How do you think that, like, you know, if like somebody say, you know, move, say, you know, from New Jersey to Milwaukee, as I did, and I'm like hoping that the league will have sort of, you know, very stringent rules about like toxicity and that kind of stuff in the league. How do you think that it'll play if like somebody say moves and then they basically, you know, either get warned or banned or like something like that because of a toxicity reason? How do you think that like that'll affect, you know, the league specifically for like a people that are, you know, basically moving cities or even countries to play?
Yeah, so one, I think there's an interesting article we've written about class in leagues and draft day. The kids who spent a lot of money on a plane ticket they couldn't afford. There were two players that didn't actually make it because they didn't make the background check, which I thought was really interesting. And they were tweeting about it.
Interesting.
Who's that kid at Forbes? Is it Brian something? Like, he is super good.
Shout out to Brian Mazique. Yeah.
Yeah. So Brian Mazique. Yeah. Like, he's been, you know, on it. Right. I was like, I'm just coming on the side here. Clearly, this is the dude in the space. But, you know, reporting back and like looking at everybody's Twitter feed and talking about like these hopes being dashed. So that's one piece of it, right? Looking at that. The second piece is that, like I said, 2K League is a totally different animal than most of any other esport, right? It's coming in with, it's coming in with the type of backing and funding and structure of the NBA, which the other sports didn't have. Like, they're making it up, they're doing their own culture. And they're growing their own cultures, right? Like the culture base of StarCraft is not the culture base of Dota, is not the culture base of Smash, is not the culture base. Those are all different places and players. The NBA, though, is a large family brand. They ain't playing this. This is not going to happen. And even on the stage, Adam Silver in his presser is going, okay, well, we need to figure out why there's not more women in the sport, and we're going to confront the toxicity. Like, they're from the jump. We're going to have to figure out what this is, right? And so I think that baseline level of, what are we just going to call it? We'll call it toxicity because it's like that brew of like misogyny, homophobia, racism, transphobia. Like this is just a brew that people just like to sip on and spit back out at the screen. that we accept as this weird baseline in gaming, like to the point where you're like, okay, if it's this much racism, I'll just deal with it and not think about it. And then if it's this much racism, we'll be like, go and deal with it. And if it's this much racism, we're like, yo, can you stop doing that right now? But like, you start getting used to dealing with it in some way. And then even the woman I interviewed for the piece about 2K, the woman that made 250, Wendy Fleming, you know, I was asking her about it and she was very nonchalant about, you know, harassment in sports games and playing 2K and feel a part of the community. And then it wasn't until like the end when I'm asking her a couple other questions where she goes, yeah, you know, I'm playing and like this guy was calling me a B, right? Like, oh, there's a B on the team. And I was like, girl, what? Like in combine? Right, right, in the combine. But I think that's also like not 100% of the, that part of it isn't 100% of the issue of why more women aren't necessarily in 2K. But the whole idea of toxicity is something that the NBA is going to handle much more aggressively, I think, than the other esports. The other esports are kind of like, well, this is like part of, we have to like deal with something, right? So you saw that whole thing with like Blizzard and Hearthstone, where they're like, we are going to do better. What is better in this spectrum, right? So far, we have not seen much better. But the NBA is much more aggressive about like, no, this is not, this cannot happen with our brand and our teams and the amount of money that we have put into you. And the types of meltdowns that we've seen take other pros out of esports, like absolutely unheard of in the NBA. I would be shocked if those players that they flew out to these different things weren't getting that same kind of rookie treatment and rookie camp that they put, you know, the more traditional basketball players through, where they're going through and they're being like, this is how you act in public. This is how you're supposed to conduct yourself. This is what you're not supposed to be doing because you're a representative of our brand now, right? And then, of course, these kids, like, they've signed contracts. They've moved cities. Their paycheck is on this, right? There's very little room for being extra.
Right. So, you know, and it's funny that you talk about that kind of stuff. And, we talked about last year the Madden Championship, and the person who won the Madden Championship had a lot of, once you hit some fame and notoriety, people start digging through your crates. And the crates in the digital age are your Twitter. And there was a lot of stuff in his Twitter history and in his Twitter present that made him less than a grand figure for EA Sports and the Madden brand. They wound up fining him, but the fine was a pittance compared to the amount of money that he won. The thing that we know about the NBA is that the NBA isn't shy, especially since, you know, the ethnic makeup of the league. The NBA has been really at the forefront of talking about issues that concern our diaspora. The thing that I want to talk about is the income. You know, you talked about the checks that these guys have on the lines. The amount of money that they're able to make, or that they'll be making, I think that the range is anywhere between $32,000 and $35,000 for the 6 months that they'll be signed under contract. Where do you think, is this a sign of the NBA? Because again, for those people that aren't initiated, Adam Silver talked about how this is their fourth league, the NBA, the WNBA. The NBA G League, which is their developmental league, now sponsored by Gatorade, ding, and now the NBA 2K League. The G League players make about half of the amount of money that the NBA 2K League players will be making. Is this a sign of the NBA really kind of putting their money where their mouth is, or is this a sign of strength? Or belief in this system? And do you think those incomes will increase if this becomes a success?
all of those are true statements, right? So one, the NBA is really looking at it. I mean, my colleagues, Jacob and Ohm, just wrote a great piece on how, like, they felt like Adam Silver was one of the godfathers of esports in America, right? Because of the how big this rollout was for a relatively unproven concept, right? Are people going to watch Pro 2K?
Right.
But the league is betting. Right. They're like, look, the 17, these are the first 17 that signed on. We're trying to get to 30 in the next 3 years. Like, we're going to have every single person have one. Because they're looking at the revenue model overall. And, like, sports revenue is really fascinating and really complicated, like how they actually make the money. So it was funny, even like my editor, Raina, had asked when I was writing this, she was like, what sport league does esports compare to from a financial perspective? And I was like, I can't answer that question. Like, how do you start, like, even if you start pulling stuff, so I was like, okay, maybe soccer is like similar. Right. So I go look at like the money in you know, MLS, and I'm like, okay, well, esports is, as an industry, is pulling in more than like individual teams. Right. But those teams also have like alternate rights, like types of income and revenue, right? So it's not just like, here's the players and here's the money and then here's the ultimate prize pool. It's also, here's the licensing of our gear and here's like our stadium funds and here's like the appellate stuff that we do. And then here's the licensing of our likenesses to video games and here's this and here's that. And there's all this alternate revenue. Here's the broadcasting fees. Here's these that there's just no way to document. Also, like, the esports data is bad in general, just so you know. Like, depending on who you ask, you get radically different pieces of the market. You get radically different estimates of how much this is worth, what money is coming in, how you quantify that money. Do you count betting or non-betting in the overall esports take? Like, what are we even counting? So, like, there is a lot of work that has to be done before you can say, like, this is what money looks like. But I think from one of the reasons why it's so interesting to me from a financial perspective is that most of these young kids, right, who are signing these contracts for 32, 36, these are, like, very good jobs, right?
Right.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Right. Honestly, more attainable, right? For some, like, a lot of these kids have put in way beyond Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours to be, some of the best in 2K. And for that effort, they're about to be rewarded with steady job, paycheck, contract employees, like, good working conditions. There's a lot of stuff that's happening with this league that doesn't necessarily happen in other leagues, that makes it almost better than a job. I was like, what are the alternatives? Like, some of these kids are like 18, 19 years old.
Right.
Like, what were they doing before? Right. Driving Uber? That's a fun thing I want to explore at some point. Like, what was your life before this, right?
Because they kept getting singing happy birthday to you at Red Lobster.
Yeah, you know, slinging cheese, slinging rolls. Like, that's what they were doing. Right. And they kept standing up here and they're like, it's a dream come true to be playing video games. Like, this is my dream. So being able to see that dream attached to a salary that most people in America aren't seeing anymore, especially with the rise of the gig economy, like, this is big business. This is a big deal. Right. And I also was very shocked that they made more than the G League. I was like, starting to look like a weird, too. Like.
That definitely bugged me out.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, it's amazing.
By double. And then, I mean,
by double. And then, like, the G League also has their own issues because, like, then those players who are good enough could also play in foreign leagues. Foreign leagues tend to pay
and
more.
Make a lot more.
Same problem in the WNBA, right? We ran like a Vice Sports Clubhouse feature that was produced by Carmelo Anthony, and one of them was on like Simone Augustus and like her crazy schedule to like make money by playing in the Russian leagues but maintain in the WNBA and like what that actually meant. And like, so again, so like the whole like player compensation thing is really interesting. I think in part it's because esports has so much capital flowing toward it right now. The people are like, we're willing to invest and then put the money in for top talent in a way that they haven't necessarily seen for their other leagues. And they're like, okay. But also esports is benefiting from kind of having that tech halo, having a video game halo,
having a sponsored halo.
So people are like, okay, let's invest a little bit more into this because we don't know what this could become. And then the scale, right? So people know like the scale play on these games is amazing. Video games, as we were talking about a little bit earlier, somebody actually tweeted that response to my article. They're like, it's not a racial issue in the U.S. It's Koreans versus everybody. And I was like, okay. We can discuss that. Because I put that in my talk. I didn't put that in the paper. I'll be fair. Because let's not act like everything is a fair playing ground, right? What has the state of Korea done that the United States hasn't? What does their broadband look like versus ours?
Right.
What does their infrastructure look like versus ours? Like, these are questions you got to start asking when you talk about, like, are we forwarding the best competitors, right? Esports right now has this like walk-on model, and that's what they're assuming everybody, the best person is the person who showed up to play and then beat all the challengers currently here. But most traditional sports, they have some combination of both walk-on and scouting, where they go and look for people and they go, you know, this person could be really great and we need to develop them into who they can be, right? To go on. Like, it would be unheard of in basketball. It'd be like, hey, this is great kid. LeBron plays awesome, but he didn't show up to the tryouts, so we're not going to do anything. He doesn't exist. Right. Like, but that is totally esports. Esports is like, they weren't here, whatever. Moving on.
Right.
But, you know, and those regional things, these national fishers, are really interesting to watch too. So like I was listening to a talk one time, I think Lisa Nakamura was giving it. She's like an OG in the digital race space. She's literally the person that wrote the book on race in cyberspace. So Lisa was giving a talk and she talked about how another gaming scholar said gaming was the first transnational space, right? You can play a game, you can play especially an MMORPG, and you can be from anywhere in the world and whatever, and you're playing alongside everybody else. Boundary means nothing, border means nothing, right? We're not seeing the same types of international tariffs and stuff like that that dictate the other types of culture that flow around the globe. You know, so video games is this opportunity for a new space. And esports is interesting because now they're bringing that nationalistic focus of sports that we see in the Olympics every single year. Right, and they're pulling that into game space in a very interesting way. So like I said, there'll be a lot to develop out of that. There'll be a lot to emerge. There's, you know, there's heavy esports interest in Europe. I think there's an esports school in Scandinavia that I was like, just all they do is rock the esports. And so it'll be interesting to see how each country then invests in what they feel like is this burgeoning infrastructure for esports and sporting events and see how they end up doing that. And that will really talk about how this economy is shaping.
Well, you know, so there was something interesting in everything that you said was interesting, Latoya, but there was something very specific that was interesting to me was about the conversation behind the revenue model for esports and specifically the NBA 2K League. Let's talk about merchandising. Do you foresee a moment where you know, there's somebody has a Maverick, you know, the Dallas Mavericks E-League team, I forget what the name is, but with, you know, a jersey with Dimes' name on the back with his number. You know, will we start to see that kind of stuff? Will we see endorsement deals for and do they have the leeway? You know, does Dimes have the leeway to sign an endorsement deal with a third party vendor now that he is the first pick overall in the E-League?
I mean, so one, yeah. I mean, like, I don't know what his contract says. I haven't seen him, so I can't speak for that.
Right.
But theoretically, of course. I mean, like, you're seeing that with the new draftees in the you know, Standard League in NBA. So, like, De'Aaron Fox, who we profiled, took him to EA Play with Mark Spears, like, last year when he was rookie. And, like, he got a headset sponsor, a keyboard sponsor. His gaming is, he's almost as known for his gaming as he is on the court as he is off the court. Like, the kid is a gamer all the way through. And so he's been able to get sponsored, stuff like that. So, of course, like, these kids can start saying, like, oh, these are my... I mean, like, the league, of course, is going to own a lot of these things, sponsors, so, like, the official sponsors, Alienware PCs, like, stuff like that. They won't be playing on anything else. And so how the league allows them to monetize against their own likeness is going to be... That's a question that I think is still getting worked out. And that's interesting.
Right.
Could we see people with Dimes jerseys? I mean, like, you see this with Equifax. They sell their jerseys.
Right.
Most people do sell their team jerseys. The difference with 2K that makes it very interesting, and that's been, like, the open question here, is that, like, yes, people want to see players who are playing their favorite avatars, their favorite people. But is someone going to want to see someone really play the virtual Steph Curry really well versus the actual Steph Curry? Like, that's a very fine line. It's a very hard thing. So there's a lot of questions with the 2K League that are not answered yet. It hasn't started. We have to see. Is there an appetite? Is there an audience? Is there, you know, is there something more here? And in terms of the integration with the league, there's a bunch of other things that they could be doing that other esports don't have access to. They have access to the entire NBA infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. Are they the halftime competitions now? Are they the pregame competition that get people hyped? Are they going to travel like Harlem Globetrotter style? Like, what they could do anything because they have that infrastructure.
Right.
So, you know, like, for them, you know, there's a reason why Adam Silver and them have invested so much into this, right? They think they're going to get that revenue back out. So the question is how, and then how does that also impact the players, which is always the question that should be at the forefront of people's minds, right? What's happened with the players? There's a reason why. Like, people don't like talking about race in esports. They don't like talking about gender, right? But it's like these things are also tied up in questions about labor and questions about money and questions about how you're treating these players, right? This is why we're starting to see players associations form. This is why people are starting to try to have like actual standards and unionize, because players are getting ripped off. You're trying to see all of the things that happen in sports are happening in esports. And so you're starting to see those infrastructures feed each other.
Yeah. One of the interesting things that I kind of noticed in the ramp up to the actual draft was, and it was one of the things that I was kind of harping on a little bit in the background. I was like, had my little picket sign. I was like, where are black people at in some of this marketing? I don't see any of this. There was like two white kids who were getting a lot of the kind of press when they were doing at least even the ramp up, you know, yesterday when the actual draft was being held. I guess I kind of asked this question based on the fact that we've seen previously when it comes to the NBA, there's this very interesting pushback to hip hop culture in the Iverson era, right? We saw this very specific pushback towards hip hop culture, towards specific blackness, specific versions of blackness that they felt were profitable and also palatable. And we saw that this was a conversation that was happening in the NBA space. And now we see, you know, the political aspects kind of pulling themselves in with LeBron being more politically outspoken. The WNBA players having their kneeling moments and their t-shirt moments and talking about those things. Do you feel like there's going to be a space where the 2K League, which has been very apolitical in lots of ways, right? Like we've had folks on the show talk about, and folks in the Madden space too, talk about, you know, there are things that they don't want to touch in those spaces, in those outside spaces where that Venn diagram hits. Do you feel like they are fully going to embrace, you know, a lot of these young kids who are coming from wherever their hometowns were and talk about some of those stories? Because they didn't do any player profiles during the broadcast. And that was the thing that, as a person who's looking at the marketing side always, I'm like, how do you get people behind a league when the most important thing, especially in the digital form, is going to be the players? It's going to be the people who are going to be the ones behind those virtuals, behind those sticks. And that's the only way you're going to get people actually involved with any kind of esports, is getting those stories out. Do you feel like they're going to actually take the time to go back and do some of that work and actually talk about and bring those stories to the forefront?
Yeah. I mean, I think when I was reporting the second piece, when I was talking to you, the women that didn't make it and trying to figure out why more women didn't make it, one of the things that the NBA said from their side was that they had no idea who the players were because it was just handles. It's all screen names. So they didn't know who they were, their backstory. All that stuff was getting verified like the day before the draft went live. There simply was not time, right? Like I'm sitting there with my editor going, all right, hold on. They haven't verified that there's no women yet. They're still going through the background.
They said
that
they didn't have time, though? Seriously?
Well, it's not. They didn't say they didn't have time to profile anybody. I was saying from the very accelerated time frame that they were on to like launch this and have the draft. They made a very beautiful video that maybe people didn't see because it was between first round and second round. But they made a very beautiful video of like getting the kids styled, right? Because they did that. They were in what I find really interesting is they're really trying to inaugurate the kids into the league. It's not just that they're the esports players, right? They're giving them the same traditions, right? Do you have your draft day suit? Swin Cash was sitting there talking about that. Did you do that? And so they showed the stylist that they hired these kids to come through and be like, let's have your individuality show on stage when you come and draft. And like, again, like these are gamers. These are not necessarily like, you know, so it's a different, I think, aesthetic overall. But they were also coming, you know, they were doing like a barbershop tour, like, the stuff that they would do with rookie players, they're also doing with the incoming rookies for the 2K League. And I thought that was really interesting. Like, that was a fascinating thing. Will we get to know? Well, who knows? We don't know. And then, of course, each team has their own culture.
They're all rookies. Right.
They're all rookies. And each team has their own culture. And they're meeting the new rookies, too. So it's like, there's a lot that, I feel like there's a lot that will emerge with the 2K League. It's just, it's too new right now to really say what's happened, what hasn't happened, and to say that definitively, I feel like you can't do it yet because it's just too new. Like, we need 3 or 4 games, or we need to look at how the marketing evolves over time. We need to look at who they think they are targeting and who's actually showing up. We need to look at these things, right? But there needs to be a little bit more to go on, I think, until we can make, you know, determinations about like how they've chosen to pitch anything. I think at this point, it's as new to them as it is to us, and everybody's just going, is this even going to work? It's a 6-month contract. Like, is this a thing that's going to continue? And if so, yeah. like, you know, we're going to, everybody's talking about the second round of draft and like next year's rookies, stuff like that. We ain't got through this year yet. So let's see what starts to emerge. And then I also think, too, there'll be some things based on the team that they were drafted into. So it's like the Warriors are a very outspoken, very unified team about these types of issues, and they feel fine like bringing stuff out. And then when you have superstars like LeBron, stuff like that, they can help set the tone for the league. They can say, oh, I'm fine with being fined, right? And the way that, like, you know, LeBron and them can will take a fine for $1 million for, you know, wearing a shirt that they weren't supposed to and whatnot. The WNBA, like when the Liberty protested, they all got slammed with fines. And there was a campaign against NBA players to pay the WNBA fines because a lot of the WNBA players are making 70 grand a year. They're making what the esports kids are making. So, like,
you
know, and so there's some patterns there that, again, like I said, I think they have to kind of play out. And I feel like, too, with the reputation that gaming has, and again, like the NBA is like, we are not playing that game. I think the players are going to be extra cautious in this first batch because there's so much riding on their participation that they're not going to bring up like a lot of these different pieces that might make up their personality. And we'll see more comfort. I feel like there'll be some players that are just going to be themselves no matter what. But we'll start seeing more comfort as things become more stable with the league.
Cool. So when I watch the Overwatch League, which I'm a big fan of, there's usually a couple hundred thousand people watching at any given time. And this is a league, you know, where they have, you know, they have matches about, I think, 3 or 4 days a week. So it's like very regular, and they have playoffs and all that stuff. And they've very consistently been able to pull that like amount. You know, when Drake, you know, and Ninja and these other people played
Fortnite,
Fortnite, they had, you know, they set a record for concurrent viewers on like Twitch, which was, you know, like 500 or 600,000 people at once. Do you think that this league can survive based on the existing esports audience that is already tuned into things like a Twitch, that is already watching games like League and Dota and Overwatch and like a Fortnite, PUBG? Or do you think that it's critical for them to reach out and get a more mainstream audience to get interested in esports for the league to survive?
Well, I mean, like I said, it's not an organic league, right? Like, there was a player base for 2K, and then the NBA came and wrapped infrastructure around it and decided to make it a pro league, right? So it's not fighting for survival in the way that other games would be. So that's, like, it's a separate thing. And then, too, so, like, yes, viewership, spectatorship is the normal way that we would pace an esport and say, like, okay, well, this is, it has this number of viewers, stuff like that. This is popularity. This indicates this. It's how you get advertisers. NBA's on a different model, right? They may have a totally different revenue model in mind for this that we're not thinking about, right? Like, they might be like, yes, it's going to be viewership and ties. Or maybe they're like, no. We just need people to come to the stadiums when we don't have games for NBA. And that's what's most important to us. We get the stadiums, the concessions. The stadiums are full year-round. We're good. Like, that might be their revenue model. And if that's their metric, because we don't know their metric for success for this league, right? Their metric might just be, like, are they hyping the crowds enough? Do we have a full stadium, you know, five nights a week instead of three? Right? We don't know yet.
I hope they don't do that as their model.
Right? I mean, you don't know. You don't know. We don't know. It could be, you know, it could be concurrence on Twitch. They could decide they want to see if people are going to do it on NBA TV. It could be a metric of how many more people are now playing 2K, right? How many more people are competing and participating in the 2K community? Maybe that's just enough of a metric. So we kind of don't know how they're basing success, which makes it difficult, right? So we could say, like, viewership is the most traditional one and saying, okay, they need to do it. But we don't know what they're basing it on. And then, two, to your other part of your question, I do feel like the NBA is going for a much broader play. They're going for a much bigger scale play, which sounds weird because when you think scale, like, you really think about, like, the global multinationals, the bigger games that are over the more traditional esports side. And I say traditional esports, you know, like the last decade, yes. Traditional esports side. But Pat says it's been 20 years. And I'm like, okay, I believe you. I believe you. But, you know, so we can see that type of scale. But the NBA scale and the mainstream scale and that, like, crossover play between people who are not esports fans, people who are sports fans, right? And then all these folks in the middle, right? Your more casual fans, folks who are fans of esports even though they don't necessarily play video games, fans of esports who play, certain things and not other things. I'm trying to figure out if we can capture those fans, right? Is there a way to more deeply engage? And then, of course, esports always gets like that very coveted demographic of the, you know, 18 to 24 or sometimes 16 to 24 year old male, mm-hmm. right? Then that's what everybody in sports is currently chasing. Right. The view that male has changed, his habits have changed, what he likes to watch has changed, and they're moving toward that. So, like I said, it's complicated. Like, we'll see a little bit more of the master plan, I think, unfolding as you see where they put the emphasis, but it's a little bit tough to call it, like, right now.
I wonder, though, and I'm happy that you brought that up, and I didn't really think about that, and really I didn't think about how new people are going to be ingesting all this new content from a thing that they maybe kind of already touch in their non-sports lives, because it's like, this is a digital sport, but it's not the same thing as going to watch or participating in the actual sport itself, which I think is going to be an interesting hurdle that they're going to have to try to figure out in terms of presentation as far as the league goes. But I didn't think about that until you said it. They're going to get opened up to a new level, not new level of racism, but like an extra level of, like, we see how there are some really racist sports fans, right? You go to a stadium and you take your Kaepernick jersey out. You know what I mean? Like, you'll hear all the stuff in those spaces. How does the league deal with that now that that's another virtual? You're bringing more people and more eyes to these folks who are going to be black and brown, who are going to deal with stuff that I'm sure they deal with in their digital lives. Now they're going to get this from folks who are probably paying to come see them in the same way that the regular athletes are going to be having to figure that stuff out. How do you feel the league and both, because the league and 2K have big stakes in that, right? They don't want their fan base to seem like they're racists in and of itself. But how does that kind of work itself in your mind about how the league and both 2K are going to adjust to that stuff too?
Well, so Orris Stewart, who I interviewed for the first for the second article, he's their the chief of diversity and inclusion at the NBA. They're like, we got a committee on this. We're working to figure out how do we make this better. Like, this is an immediate thing that we're working on. They're going full bar at it, right? Which is interesting, because like I said, I have not seen a lot of successful diversity initiatives come out of gaming. Like, you know, we've been beating this drum a while. We've been beating this drum since Custer's Revenge, man. Like, there needs to be. We need to fix this. And it still has not happened. Like, this is not moving in a direction that where you're like, oh, this is progress, right? And even, like I said, even after huge embarrassments, right? So, like, I wrote about Terrence Ann and Hearthstone just because I was like, there's so much racism I could bring, but let's just look at this one incident, right? Let's just look at this one time. And you're looking at what happened to this kid, and you're going,
looks like Latoya froze.
This really could have been prevented.
We'll see. Anybody could have prevented
this. Any pre-planning.
I never finished.
Yes, anything could have fixed it.
Oh, there you go.
But it just didn't, right? Right. And so it's going to be difficult, because it's like, how do you solve a problem like entrenched racism and sexism that you see in real life all the time, that people are totally fine with, right? And that now people are more emboldened to do so because they're in all of these spaces that reward this level of like toxicity and terribleness. And everyone's like, well, this is just kind of what you're dealing with if you're playing, and don't worry about it. But with a very family-friendly league, it's like, no, this is not how we want to go. And like I said, I think they're thinking really hard about moderation. They're probably thinking really hard about inclusion. They're thinking really hard about probably player contracts and what you can and can't say. Right? There have been esports pros who've lost their careers over ill-timed outbursts and, you know, racist stuff on their feeds. And so, you know, you'll expect some of that to probably continue. But like I said, the NBA is trying to be much more proactive about it than I've seen any other sports company be. Like, a lot of the esports companies are kind of more like, oh, did that happen? Oh, that's unfortunate. Okay, well, we'll just be over here. We don't know how that went, right? Whereas, you know, the NBA is like, no, we need to, like, try to tackle this early on. Now, is that enough to turn a tide, especially when, you know, these things have been continuing apace for, I mean, how long has 2K been out, right? Like, you're not going to change a culture of a game immediately. So figuring out, like, how do you create a space where every player can play, you know, free of that type of abuse, especially if you haven't been able to accomplish that in real life, is a very tough order for the digital space.
Right. I, you know, it's funny that we talk about it, and obviously it's definitely going to be a concern, but this is the NBA, and you know, this is a space where, not to say that it doesn't happen, because it absolutely does, but this is a space where you know, most of the athletes are black or brown. And, you know, in fact, if you're a white American, especially, and an NBA player, you are the minority in the league. And you know, while the fans are diverse, I think that most of the fans are, they carry an expectation that the best players, that the players that they're cheering on, won't look like them. And I think that for the most part, those fans of NBA 2K would likely believe that the demographics would be similar. They don't, you know, obviously it's not a one-to-one type of thing, but, you know, outside of the FGC, there is, I think that it's probably in games like Madden and NBA 2K that you expect to see the largest group of marginalized people playing as players at the highest level. While I definitely am concerned about toxicity in esports and in the chats and in the way that fans interact with the players, I'm less concerned with it for NBA 2K League than I am for Dota or League or Hearthstone, which, you know, we've already seen when you know, a player with a great tan goes out and they're playing online, you know, how people react. So, you know, I definitely have a lot of confidence in the NBA and in 2K, partially because of, as you said, LaToya, the way that the NBA has been aggressive about this and how they are preparing themselves for this, but also because the fan base itself is more used to and maybe even has an expectation that the players are going to look the way that they do.
Mm. Yeah, and that's a really, really good point. I mean, like, you're totally right that there's a sports empathy in some ways that is different from other places, but it's not total. It's not permanent.
No, not at all.
But it's an interesting thing, and there's some of that, like, national, like, local kinship, too. Like, people feel like they're attached to LeBron. He's a Cleveland boy. He's an Iowa boy. He's an Akron boy. Like, this is our guy, right? And they can transcend whatever might be awkward racially, right? If they saw LeBron outside of that context, if LeBron wasn't LeBron, he was just a regular guy, right?
Well, he wouldn't be a regular guy. He's 6'8", 270 pounds.
Okay, this is true. 6'8", 270 pounds, black man rolling around.
And he might every have a second you see him, his hairline is moving. Hey, you know, send your LeBron factual hate to at Stubby Stan.
You're going to get hit with a Sprite.
Exactly. Right.
And you're going to
run me
though.
Over with a Kia Forte.
Right. But when sports players transgress, right, when they do something that I think particularly white fans are go, oh, we can't rock with this anymore.
Right, absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
When you start seeing stuff. So it's interesting because I think
absolutely.
I think we published an article, We Is in the Undefeated, recently about kind of like how the Warriors winning streak has allowed them some of this freedom to stand tall and to talk about social justice and to do it in a very direct way, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, they're basically America's team at this point. Everybody wants to see Steph. Everybody wants to see KD. Everybody wants to see them win. They're like, oh, yeah, it's the Warriors. It's the Golden State Warriors. So the Warriors can be like, okay, actually, can we talk about this? Can we talk about that? Can we talk about these other issues? If they weren't winning, would they have that same flexibility and freedom? And that's something that a lot of athletes do wrestle with, right? We look at the legacies of Muhammad Ali and John Carlos and all the folks who've taken stands over the years, and those were some rough years for them, you know?
Yeah.
Those were years where they were blackballed, where they were pushed out for opportunities, where people didn't want to deal with them, where they were, you know, stripped of their awards, stuff like that. It's only been when, you know, the arc of justice bent their way where they were able to be reinstated and people, like, recognized what they did. So it's, you know, it's a tough and it's a really, really tight line that most athletes walk. It's very tight where there's, you know, and it's also in that vein of, like, being urban or being too urban, right? For athletes, right? Like, how black is too black? And we brought up, you know, the 90s and Iverson and, like, hip hop culture being in the league and people being afraid of it and resisting it and saying they don't want it. Right. And you still see some of that playing out today. Right. Like, so now the league is, people are more accepting of hip hop culture in the league. They're there. But also, like, again, like, how black is too black? How much is too black? Right. There's definitely been like a massaging overall of kind of like the ideal black athlete image. And it definitely needs to be one that's not too aggressive, that's not too in your face about things, that feels more like an everyman, feels like you guys could hang out, feels like you guys could have a beer. And there's a lot that goes into the maintenance of that image. Right.
That you can invite to dinner and maybe date your daughter.
Yes.
Maybe. And that was the thing with Iverson. The cornrows, the tattoos made him off limits.
But also iconic.
And now everybody's tatted up.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, it's been 20 years. It's been 20 years.
Right. Oh my God.
He was the trailblazer. Right. And now, like, I know it feels like damn, everybody's years. Like, how has it been that long? How can I count things in 20 years? Like,
I know. I mean, I'm like, Tyronn Lue's a coach. Like, Iverson stepped over.
Yeah. Right.
It's crazy. It is really crazy. So I know that me, you know, as like somebody that sort of navigates between the video game work that I do and the teaching that I do in math and physics and stuff, I typically get into that conversation about, like, you know, like, what else do you do? And then I start talking about games, and they kind of like, their eyes gloss over, or they're kind of like, wait a minute, what kind of stuff is there in games to write about? Or this is just something that my kids do, or like, whatever. As somebody that's also navigated a lot of like different like journalistics bases, and like, now, like, you're like, you know, at the worldwide leader where they've been doing, you know, like traditional sports for like a long time. Do you feel like that you sometimes have to justify, you know, like covering gaming stories as like being serious or real sports, or like something worthy of talking about?
Yeah. I mean, that's been the theme. Like, I mean, I started writing my video games on the internet in 06 for a super defunct, like, you can't even find these servers no more, the Iris Network, with an all-female gamer magazine called Cerise. It's a long time ago.
Wow.
This has been, it's been in the paint for a while, man. And when I used to write about games for Racialicious, there was always that immediate, like, shock. So I play video games, and then you're taking them seriously. And then, you know, you write about it for a while, and then you stop doing it, and it's dead for a while. I was talking to Evan Narcisse. So Evan, who is now writing for Black Panther.
Rise
of the Black Panther.
Great. So, I mean, back we were all just nerdy bloggers. We were hanging out writing about video games, and Evan was on Kotaku and stuff like that. And I was at Jezebel. Right. And I was talking to him, not too recently because he's been busy, but, you know, fairly recently, sometime this year.
Right.
And I was like, remember when there were like 8 of us writing about racing games? And he was like, I need to see the receipts. Were there 8?
Right.
It was 8. Like, there was like, this is not a thing that generally happens. And even now, like, so we are so many years out from when I started writing about games. God knows when the people from like 1UP, Shoe, all of them could tell you from back in the day, right? I remember when Escape was paid 25 cents a word and they put that up there. God knows what they pay now. I forgot. But like, remember when Escapist was like the spot you could write for? You could be Escapist, Kotaku, MTV Multiplayer. Like, there's only like this many.
Right.
And then before that, it was us with our blogs, right? But even now, it's really hard to get people to understand that there's so much more to gaming than just, oh, kids are just kind of doing this. Even as it's become more accepted. And you hear that in the fights about, like, our games art, of course, but why are we? We're not having this debate. It's not even, you know, we hear that over and over and over again. And even, like I said, even at the worldwide leader, right, you get drafted into esports. Let me tell you how I got there. So I wrote for the esports issue of the magazine, not because I had any great esports affairs, but because I was hate tweeting a book on the plane. And, and the book I was hate tweeting was the Grand Theft Auto story, Jacked, by David Kushner.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, so David Kushner is like the Ronin Roe of video games. Like, Ronin Roe wrote all the old books about hip-hop. So whether you liked him or not, whether you agree with him or not, whether he was just writing shit that was crazy, you had to read Ronin Roe. There was nobody else writing scholarly books about hip-hop when he was doing it. Now there's more.
Right.
We got Jeff Chang. We got all these other people who are in the spot, in the space. But Back then, it was only Ronan Rowe. Right. And so if he was being creepy about women or whatever,
and Nelson, Nelson George.
Well, Nelson George, you're right. Post-Soul America, the post-Soul generation. Right, so he was an OG, but he wrote three. Ronan was cranking them out like he had a contract. I was like, oh my God, why was he talking? So I'm reading, and so David Kushner is like that for video games, where he writes so many things, right? And then I was reading it, and it was just, you know, as a woman, you realize something is not for you, and you're okay with that. I just wrote that about like Ready Player One, where I was like, you know, I grew up on white boy narratives. I knew what this was when we walked into this door. Right. I didn't finish the book because it was too gross, but the Spielberg took that part out enough where I was like, okay, this movie's going to be fine. You just get used to certain things. You shouldn't have to, but you do. You're like, all right, well, this is what we are. That book hit my threshold. Remember I was telling you about that threshold of like, okay, this is my acceptable level of like bullshit racism and I'm not going to deal with it. Right. This is this. Yeah. So we were here and he was comparing the buttons on the Galaga machine to a vaginal slot. Go back and read that book. It was nasty. I was tweeting about it. I was like, I hate this guy. This is the nastiest shit. It was like, this men writing video game stuff, right? So I was tweeting it. Yeah. And Megan Greenwell, who is now the editor-in-chief of Deadspin, Megan Greenwell was watching from this flight, and she goes, I didn't know you played video games. Yes, I do. Do you want to write for the esports issue of the ESPN magazine? And I wrote, I don't know anything about esports. You sure? I play video games. So that piece became The Legendary Adventures of a Girl Gamer. I think there's one of a woman in there somewhere. And they were like, fine. Go with it, LaToya. Great. Wrote the thing. Got the check. Was great. Good magazine money. Cashed that joint. Was like, thanks, guys. I don't know shit about sports. Won't be working with you again. It was fun, though. Then the undefeated happened.
Oh, my God.
And they were like, Kevin, who's my boss, was like, LaToya. Because we were going to go. He was at the post. I thought that's where I was going. And he was like, yeah, about that. I'm actually going to ESPN. Same job over here. Let's go. I was like, oh. All right, well, I got race and I got culture, but I ain't got sports. Is that cool? All right, cool. Go over here. Let's go do that. So on day two of ESPN, right? Day two. Like, can't even log into my computer yet. I don't know how anything works. I get this phone call from this guy named Dan Kaufman, and he launched the esports vertical. And he's like, hey, LaToya, we read your article. Do you want to, like, meet some people? Here's the other gamers at this company. And it turns out there's like a little gamer cabal of like, we must all like make this stuff happen. Yes, we're going to get like, we must have to make this happen. So like, I was like, all right, I'll join you, gamer cabal. Like, these are my people anyway. It's fine.
Right.
These people happen to be all white guys. I didn't find out like other gamers of color and women until later. But I was like, all right, we could be cool. This whole new squad. They welcomed me beautifully. And I was like, okay, so that's how that happened. But even at a huge place like ESPN where I think, you know, the majority of the people there played video games. They loved them. They have good memories. We just did NBA Jam Day. Like, right, shout out to Cliff for getting that done. We just did NBA Jam Day. Had a whole retro thing. And even still here, we're like, no, this is for real. And they keep, like, drafting. So it was like, I was like, I don't know enough about esports. And now it's been 2 years. And I'm like, God damn it, I'm just rolling with esports. It's fine. It's fine. I'm here. Right. They got Mina Kimes from the magazine. They were like, Mina, you can do profiles. Can you just do some more? They just basically like keep trying to pull anybody who's got any kind of like connection. Oh, they just rope us in.
Right.
So still fighting. I guess that's the long answer to a short question. Still fighting.
Right. Hey, fight that fight. So, you know, it was an interesting thing that you said, LaToya, as you were talking about it. So you weren't a big sports fan going into the undefeated. How did you develop? Because clearly, as you're talking about things, it's clear that you're knowledgeable about sports in general now. How did you develop how did you develop that language going forward in such a short period of time?
Well, I'm a geek. I like to learn things. This is at some point, it's just you got to learn the thing in your life, and you're surrounded by it all the time. But I'm hoping that my staff is watching and blowing me up in this chat, because they were like, my husband when I started was like, LaToya, don't go in there and say Stephen Curry. Don't do it. Please don't do it. LaToya, no. And I would be sitting places with like Monis and Ozzy and Lois and Morgan, and they would be getting like so hype, and I have no idea. Like, that was Michael Wilbon. Who? Okay, sure, great.
Who?
I remember Tony Kornheiser. He used to have a comedy column. Like, I don't know. Yeah, sure. Right. They're upstairs. What's up, y'all? And then, like, one time we were at All-Star the first year, and I'm like, I'm trying to learn. I'm going. Y'all. I'm trying. I'll just try to be honest about who I am, because I'm like, look, they want. Right. If you try to front, then people will come and blow you up.
Right.
If
right,
you come
yeah,
out like,
yeah.
look, I'm sorry, then they're cool with it. Right, so I was right. sitting down, and there was a tall guy in basketball shorts sitting next to me, and I was like, okay, cool. So I'm just like on my phone, like producing the shoot, doing the thing. And then the guy gets up, and I get up and go to my staff, and they sit there, Lois and Morgan are like, Latoya, you were sitting next to Grant Hill. And didn't say wow. that. And I was like, I should have wow. got that, because I remember when he married Tamia and they had that music video. Like,
right.
I should have known that one. Damn, this that right. one. So, like,
right,
but over right. time, people keep repeating, you know, there's certain names that are important, there's certain right. sports that you get to, right? right. You start watching games. If you're looking back in my Twitter feed, you'll notice I have, like, y'all remember that movie Living Large?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
That all that old, ridiculous Black B movie where he feels like he's right. turning white. Yes. I feel like I'm turning into, like, a sports man.
Right.
And I'm like, and so I keep catching myself doing stuff that's weird. So, like, I was at a party with a bunch of, like, other media people, and it's mostly women. It's, like, me and the one guy in the room, we watching the sports game, and I was like, how did I get here?
Right.
So, like,
Who am I?
What's happening?
Right, I know when games are on. My husband's like, what's going on? Right. I was like, yeah, is Michigan going to be on later? Is it cool?
Right.
but I think it's because I'm surrounded by it all day, and you just have to, like, right. at some point, you start right. picking stuff up. I'm still ain't crisp on it. Like, there's a Twitch stream that exists in the wild that when Mark Spears, who's my homie, he's the other gamer at the Undefeated. Right. Love you, yeah. bro. Thank you. Mark Spears and I ended up playing Madden for our charity Twitch stream. And right. I was like, not only do I not play Madden, I don't watch football. What is offsides? What is happening right now?
Right.
But I almost won because it's that gamer, like, ridiculous gamer luck where you're like the newbie right. and come in and you like start right. dominating everybody's
like, I like this play. I'll push this button.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, because right. Mark is like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm hitting R1. What? You said hit R1. I'm hitting R1. Like, this is right. going on. It was great. Like, it was that so, final score was 12-13. Just so you
wow,
know.
Wow.
Final
wow.
score was 12-13. Wow. Every so, man in the building. Because, I mean, keep in mind, like, this is esports. Overwatch people went on break. They was like, yeah, y'all can play Madden. Go do it. Every right. man in the building was like, oh, she make this field goal. It's over, y'all. She ready. She they were like, we're going to overtime. We can't turn this right. off. What's about to happen?
Right.
So, I mean, it's just, you hang around and you have some of the best in the biz at your back, right? I had to interview right. Baron Davis one time. I texted Mark Spears. Mark, who is Baron?
B. Diddy. Shout
what is
out.
Going on? Right? right? And, like, in the middle of the interview, too, because I told him, I was like, I'm sorry. I'm the geek. They sent me to the VR part. I right. don't really know too much about sports. I'm going to try to ask you as much about VR. My friend is Mark Spears. He'll vouch for me, like, whatever.
Right.
And in the middle of the interview, Baron Davis goes, you really don't know who I am, do you?
Right. Right.
That's so, kind of great.
I just try to stay in my geek lane at work. And then if anything else happens at sports, I'm playing EA Sports, then it worked right. out. And I don't ask no more questions.
So favorite sport, since you're new to it, favorite sport?
Oh, well, that's really easy. It's the NBA. I also like boxing yeah. a lot. Boxing, I got
okay.
into.
Okay, all right.
But
right
the on. NBA. NBA's geek league. Like, there's, like right. they do a bunch of stuff. I pretty much understand what's going on. The players are cute. Like, it kind of works out.
Right.
What are your thoughts about curling?
Right.
Oh, actually, so we produced a piece with Vernon Davis from the Redskins teaching us about curling because he's a big curling
Yo,
fan.
Yo, stop
Diddy.
Playing.
Yeah,
stop 49 playing.
On our website, audio, like, we did a joint collab with ABC. So That's Vernon awesome. Davis, he's the head of, like, the Washington, D.C. Curling League.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Yes.
Yo,
yes.
I need to talk to him.
Yo,
I need
Vernon,
to talk to him.
Yeah.
Yo, come on, Vernon. Go watch it. Like,
yo,
Vernon
I need to find this article.
Vernon yes. Davis is your curling man. Like, if you need
oh,
to know about curling.
Yo,
and
come
try to
my
get,
joint.
We try yo, to get him and Dominic Foxworth to play. This job takes Word. You down so many weird
That's
rabbit
so
holes
dope.
That you're like, oh, of course. And then also, too, like, if you care about stories and care about storytelling, sports is actually a really great place. Because there's a lot of
absolutely.
Stuff that's absolutely not getting covered, and you're just like, so why is that? So what's happening? What is CTE and concussion protocol? What are all these things?
Right.
And we start asking these things, you start learning so much about the players and who they are and where they came from.
Right.
There was a great piece of journalism because we were at All-Star, and Lois and Morgan were arguing about DeMarcus Cousins. And know anything about him, no thing, and they were like, no, you got to read this piece that we published on ESPN called The Madness of Kings. And it was all about right. like, you know, managing DeMarcus Cousins in the back house of the Sacramento Kings. And I read it and I was just like, oh my gosh. And then now I care about DeMarcus Cousins. I want to know what happened.
Right.
And this is how they get you. These are the stories. And then these are the stories that they're trying to start creating around esports, right? These right. are the stories because you will take somebody that knows nothing and get them invested because they want to see what's happening to this player. They want to see what's going on in this league. They want to care and they want to know more and they want to see what's going on.
That's my 2018, 2019 goal is to bring curling to Twitch. Right. I want there to be
a black curling team on Twitch.
Yes. And we're going to make that popping. The one question I have before we let you go, because we know it's late East Coast.
Oh, yeah.
Is one of the things I was thinking about and wanted to ask you specifically, because this is the thing that I joke about on the show, is that esports is the new esports ownership is the new restaurant/car wash for NBA teams and for black ownership. So you talked about the economics of it and seeing, you know, a thing I noticed in the 2K League was I didn't see a lot of, we know there's hardly any black owners in the actual NBA. There were very few black coaches in the 2K League, and I didn't see hardly any black GMs either.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is this going to be a thing where, you know, 2K League aside, because I, you know, that's going to come from the leadership of each NBA team, but we see with Rick Fox,
Echo Fox,
you see Shaq with the 2K League as their GM.
Right.
Do you feel like this is going to be a space where you see black athletes and also black entrepreneurs trying to jump in here and actually make a play to kind of build some of that wealth and see how that's going to grow from that standpoint?
We could, but that future is not guaranteed, right? And that's the hard part, right?
Yeah.
So that relationship is one of the reasons why I'm so happy to work with Undefeated, right? Because we can actually explore these stories, right? Aaron Dodson from our team was at the draft with me, and he was doing a profile on the one, black coach in this league, right? There's also one female. Really interesting. Right. I think she's following me on Twitter now. Shout out, Angie. There's like one. there's a couple black GMs, right? Rick is doing something totally different. We did an in-depth profile on Echo Fox and that whole crew last year, before they took Evo. Right. And that was unexpected too. Like, they were not tipped to take Evo. We did it because we were like, we got an esports company with two black principals. We got Rick Fox and Jace Hall. How did that happen?
Right.
And we went down and they were cool, opened up their offices, talked about their model. Right. And we just felt like it was a really smart and interesting take on it. So we got that up. That's the business of Echo Fox, which we published last year as part of our esports package. But the people who are like Rick Fox are rare, right? A lot of this right now is speculative money. They're hoping it'll be something big. People don't really know.
Right.
It's still like the same kind of squads. And the people who have the most money to be able to get in here and license and franchise these leagues are charging. Like, these things aren't free. You can't just organize an Overwatch League. There's a bunch of stuff that you had to do. You had to buy in. There's all these things that had to happen. And that wealth is starting to get consolidated by some players. Like, there was one, what is it? Good Luck, Have Fun, Roland Lee's book from the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
That starts with like the business of esports, and it's like it's the beginning, right? Everything is still coming together. Stuff changes every single day, but we are not in this space enough where I think we'll be able to make a significant impact, right? And like I said, that's why I'm so concerned about the FGC and specifics. And like, even as I argue for like more money in the FGC, I know that's going to irrevocably change the culture, and it might not be a thing that people want. Like, there's downsides to everything, right? But if you look at it from a purely financial perspective, right, the best shot is having these kids from the FGC, the people who are already organizing tournaments, whatever, step into the pro lane. And we're not seeing that happen in the same way, at the same rate, with the same money that you see on the PC side of esports, right? Which is why I wrote the article in the first place. I don't really care if somebody's like, oh, sorry, you're totally wrong with this. This is not what it is. I want people to start looking at that disparity early, right? Before it is entrenched, before it's locked in, before it's been 15 more years. And everybody sitting around the panels going, why isn't esports diverse? We don't need to do that, right? Because we're here now and we can see what's happening. The other piece of it, too, is about just money and investment and how that capital flows, right? So, like, Rick Fox was an accomplished basketball player and he had enough money to invest and to start doing these things. And he still pulled in three homies who were richer, right? Stratton and Ovid, people who made mad bank starting VeriSign and, you know, creating cell phone infrastructure around California to come in with him to invest this capital. And they actually created a venture capital firm of which the esports side is a piece of like the overall package that they do. All right. So like I said, so Echo Fox is on a whole other kind of thing, and it's very, very fascinating to watch. Right. On the other hand, you have people like Shaq, right, who can sign and be there and be a face of something and be a part of it. But again, that's his basketball earnings that are funding this. And there's not too many of us who just have that kind of money to front a team laying around. Like, most of the guys who own esports teams on the other side of the aisle, they aren't famous.
Right.
You don't know their names or whatever. They made their money other places, and they're just dabbling, lopping stuff out, having fun with it, figuring things out. So we are not in that space and infrastructure in the way that we would need to be to help kind of influence the future of it. And the spaces that we are in are very, very limited, right, from a revenue and upside potential. Yeah. Some of it is questions of, like, well, why don't more African-Americans start their own game publishing studios? Why don't they do that? And we've been having that conversation for 70 years, right?
It's super easy, super easy.
We've been having these same conversations and cycles about capital forever without actually trying to change something. So I feel like, you know, as esports is still nascent, this is the time to jump in on it. This is the time for people to start looking at what this business opportunity is. And like I said, to the credit of athletes, they've been seeing it, you know, more quickly, I think, than the average investor, average consumer. But as these investors come in, and, like, you know, my talk at GDC was about the PC console divide. My colleague Ryan's talk at GDC was about billionaire money coming into esports. And particularly, like, what is expected. Like, it was interesting, Ryan's last slide was of a billionaire kissing Tom Brady on the neck after he won the Super Bowl. It was a really interesting shot to look at and to talk about what's going on. And I think Ryan's, like, parting words were really, like, you know, these billionaires own sports. They're coming for esports. What are they going to expect in return? And when you look at the billionaire pool, we've only got three on our side, on our team, right?
Right.
Is Oprah going to get into esports?
Right.
Is Robert Smith going to get into esports?
Esports, right.
Right. Right. We ain't got Bob Johnson when he fell out, but, you know.
We got to get Byron Allen in there. We got to get him in there to see if he can.
We got to figure out there's, you know, people. Maybe Jay-Z and Beyonce can combine and do it. But it's like, are they, you know, but after that point, like, the field is being, again.
Rockefeller Gaming.
Yeah,
it would be a thing though.
Number one, can I just say my ongoing campaign for them to bring back Def Jam Vendetta so we can play as Rihanna? Can I just continue?
Oh wow! Wait a minute, that's a little too real. That's a little too real.
No, I'm feeling that.
Let me tell you,
like, she could be like just like throwing cases of like Fenty.
Number one, I had a lot of fun playing as Meth and Red, but I really want to play as Rihanna because I feel like she got this. Plus, Fenty Beauty, like, yo.
We need to have you back on just for that conversation alone.
Just for that alone, we need to have you back on the show. I was like, don't get me started on all the gaming weird shit that's on here. I was like, let's just, I met the producer one time. Do you know the producer for that game actually got married to Swiss Beats?
Yes.
Fabulous. They met on the game. I was like, see, video games, bring people together.
Bringing them together.
But anyway, that was love. But Jay, I mean, but like, we really need to think about, like, wealth, income, earnings. Because again, if you're not playing at the higher levels, you won't have access, right? One of these kids who takes home the championship in Dota and comes home with their personal take of $10 million, they would have a shot at licensing an esports league, being a coach, funding whatever the hell they wanted to fund, right? But if you are playing Street Fighter, if you play Capcom, if you're doing these other things and you're coming home with your $50,000 slot, maybe, that you've split.
Sorry, chat people.
That you split, like, what ends up happening? There's just less money in the pool. There's less money to invest. And again, we see this all over society. It's not just video games. Right. But it's a thing that, again, we should all be taking more seriously as folks who care about parity and equity. Because, like I said, esports is not just organic game scenes anymore. This is a new economy that's emerging. It changes people's lives. It can change people's lives. I'm talking to Wendy Fleming. She works at a call center. That money is life-changing. That opportunity is life-changing. It would have changed her life. She's going to try again, and I'm going to be rooting for her every single step of the way. I can't wait to see her, all the other women in ball like her. Like, I want to see them succeed. But we need to, like I said, we need to be realistic about what this is. This is a new economy. These are new types of jobs. These are new things opening up as the rest of the economy is extracting. We can't afford to have people being left out of this economy. We can't have the best players not being able to support themselves over essentially ridiculous stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's just dumb.
Well, man, LaToya, I knew when I met you at GDC, and I was like, we got to get you on the show at some point.
You're going to
spit fire, and you're going to drop some bombs and knowledge on everybody at home.
The worst part was you met me while I was drunk, so I don't know what you was there for. That was the Xbox one, right?
Like, yeah, that was the Xbox
game. Yeah, I was like, faded.
LaToya was like, yo,
yeah, I was like, is that guy?
Yeah. I was like, yo, Latoya, what's good?
This is what happens. This is what happens when you've been around too long. Right? I remember when Blacks in Tech at South by Southwest was 70 people, and it was like their first meetup ever. And we were all like, oh, 70. They was like, oh, 70 of us, y'all, we in here. Like, so I'm just saying. I'm overly hype at any industry event. I'm sorry.
I'm happy that you are, because you know how industry events can be. They can be real, real stiff. So it's like when you get people who are dope and they know they dope, it's good to have them in the same space. Definitely give a plug to all the stuff that you're doing before we let you go. Folks know at home if there's any stories that they should definitely be checking out that you have done or folks at the Undefeated have done that you're really excited for.
Right. Well, there was a
call out to your GDC talk also. So if you know where to get that, yeah.
Yes. Okay. So I will find. So GDC posts their talks. I know Pat was trying to get it in the free section so that y'all won't have to pay for the vault to see it. I don't know if it's up yet. I haven't got like the little email or whatever, but once I have it, I'll send it the crib version, the very like truncated version. Because that was a 30-minute talk that I squeezed into like 5 pages, cut a bunch of stuff out. So I have to get that back. That version is available on the Undefeated. You can go read that at any time. All you have to do is type into your browser, why aren't more Black kids going pro in esports? My article will pop up. There you go. That's all you need to know. Yeah. So that's there. And just please check out the work of people who are writing seriously about games, right? Before me, there were many, many folks in the field, right? You could check out Tom, you could check out Kishona, you could talk out Shira Chess, you could check out Mia Consalvo, who's been an OG for a long time, Robin Hunicky. There's so many people who have written such amazing stuff that is the foundation of my work that you should check out. I try to shout out as many people as possible anytime I write something. And link to as many great thinkers and writers, because I think gaming needs us all to really be looking at these things in a very structured and intelligent way. The last thing I want to do is have esports be like so many other things on the internet where stuff wasn't documented, so then people think it didn't exist or it didn't ever happen. You got to document these stories, right? That's the whole point of being a storyteller, so that people don't forget. So that's it.
If people wanted to get in contact with you, how can they do that?
Right. So I do check my Twitter sometimes when I feel like it. At Latoya Peterson, that's the easiest. If you don't know me, how to get in contact with me? You can generally find my work on the Undefeated, but I'm normally on the back of the house side, chilling as a producer because I don't write publicly no more because I don't feel like it. but you can find me generally digitally on the internet. I don't give out my gamer tag, but I feel like this might be the last year that I could actually like claim that and not get dragged by my friends. So at some point, I'm gonna have to like start letting people know where I am.
No, you don't.
But also like I got a 4-year-old. He plays as me sometimes. I'm not opening him up to that. Like no.
Yeah.
Word.
Right. He be in my games.
Also, if you run into Jemele Hill in the Undefeated offices, just dap her up and say, "Spawn Army loves you."
That's the truth of all truths.
Do you know how many carry notes I get from this job? I'm happy to do it because Jemele is with us now, so it's great. Right, but I mean, I'm also like, I was like, I don't know Stephen A. Smith. If I can't help y'all, I can't send.
We don't want him on the show.
Of all the people
who I don't want on the show, Stephen A. is at the top of that list.
Ridiculous. But Jemele and Michael do game. They're always out here. They do a bunch of stuff with Marvel. They're cool.
We would love to. We'd love to have them on the show.
I will next time I see her in the office, which she be traveling, so who knows? So do I. So who knows? But next time I see her in the office, I'll make sure to pass along. Let y'all know. Of course.
Okay. We are about to get up out of here for episode 215.
We are?
Okay. Yeah, we're about to get up out of here. Let everybody know the social media business, please.
Before I let people know about the social media business, I will let people know here in the Twitch chat, if you are in the Chicagoland area and happen to be going to C2E2, the Chicago Comics and Entertainment Expo, your boy will be there. So come, if you see me, grab me, hug me. I'm telling you it's okay. Say what's up. Unless I'm in the middle of an interview, if I'm in the middle of an interview, just wait. And then you can grab me and hug me. I'm a great hugger. I like them. It's cool. And, say what's up. Give me a little pound. Throw some Cheddar Bay biscuits at me. Say Bricargo loves everybody. That'd be cool. We'll have a great time at C2E2. And hopefully I'll see you guys there. For those of you that are not in the Chicagoland area or are not going to be visiting Chicago, social media business is as follows. If you want to follow us, go to all of your social media channels at Spawn On Me. That's where you'll find us. If you want to follow us individually, check the bios. Our information is in there. Go to spawnon.me. That is our website where you can find this episode and all of our episodes in our archives. We know we have some new listeners. There is lots of stuff here. Latoya's got to go through the archives as well. We've got really, really great guests, such as Latoya, in our archives. Go ahead and take a gander and a perusal through those. This show is live on Twitch every Thursday, 7:30 p.m. Pacific, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Check them out there. If you miss us there, you can catch us on our podcatcher, on your podcatcher, whatever it is, whatever your favorite one is. If it is a place where you can subscribe, please do so. Rate and review, obviously. Tell your friends, obviously. It really, really helps. Do that. And if you want to continue to help us, you can spend as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/spawnonme to get access to one show, one extra show a week, and another extra show a month, the Bricargo Beltway. And if you want to send us a message that is longer than whatever the limit is on Twitter nowadays, you can email us at spawnonmepodcast@gmail.com.
Also, if you are one of those folks who likes cryptocurrency, you can donate cryptocurrency to us now in our Twitch chat. You can do that underneath the video that you see or hear right here. So you can do that too now. That's a cool thing. Thank you, everybody who's out there in podcast land and in Twitch land for rocking with us this week and every week. We love you all. Go give C some love at C2E2. Don't grab him too hard. He's gentle. So we're going to get up out of here. Thank you again. And we say peace.